You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
This is the Horse Healthcast by Smart Equine. I'm Jenna Bosgarden, Manager of Digital Marketing for Smart Equine. And this episode, you will notice I am missing Ashley, who has absconded to warmer climates for a short time, and we should all be jealous. But I am going to be joined by a new guest, Dr. Liz Schatz, our Head of Veterinary Affairs and an excellent equine veterinarian in her own right. I'm going to let her introduce herself in a moment, and we're going to talk about her journey to, you know, how she got to where she is now, what the head of veterinary affairs does here, and things that are top of mind for her and her horses at the start of the new year.
Smart solutions, trusted voices, your source for equine health and wellness. This is Horse Healthcast by Smart Equine. The discussions in this podcast are intended for educational and informational purposes and are not intended as veterinary advice. You should always consult with a licensed veterinarian or qualified equine health professional before making changes to your horse's diet or care plan. Hosts and guests cannot guarantee the reliability, accuracy, or completeness of the information shared, and as such, these discussions are not a substitute for veterinarian or professional guidance, and any actions you take are at your own risk. Products discussed on this podcast are not endorsed by Smart Equine and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure any medical issue.
Welcome back, everyone. New year, same podcast, and I'm really excited to get started this year with all of you because, yes, January 15th is still the start of the year in my book, and like you guys probably noticed in the intro, we got a lot of ground to cover, so we're going to jump into it. Liz, first and foremost, thank you for being here with us. I kind of want to get us started with me talking a little bit less and you talking a little bit more, so can you just kind of tell us a bit about you, you know, where are you from, how long have you been a veterinarian, and what animals do you have at home, if any?
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much, Jenna. It's really fun to be here. I'm excited about this. So I'm from Sarasota, Florida, originally. I have sort of lived all over the place since growing up in Florida, and I currently live in North Carolina. I am near Greensboro, sort of like in the middle of the state. So we have access to a lot of really fun stuff here. I'm a 2010 graduate of the Kansas State University College of Veterinary Medicine. And of course, I have all kinds of animals, especially since I own property. So I have three off-track thoroughbreds. That's Wyatt, Homer, and Henry. Henry's only been here for about 3 weeks at this point, and he is a youngster. He's turning four. Two dogs, Sheldon and Buzz. One accidental peacock named Prescott. One hen named Rue McClanahan.
Of course.
And of course, obviously. And one friendly feral barn cat named Givenchy Pierre because he's very fancy.
Of course. Again, it all makes sense.
Right. Obviously. you know, you give the barn cat that doesn't let you touch him the fanciest of all the names.
So. I know, I do really love that we started out with like some very down to earth, just like regular guy names for the horses. And then we just got progressively more interesting as we went.
Interesting, unhinged, whatever.
Yeah, whatever we want to take it as. And I know we're going to get into all the equine stuff here in a second, but I think just for posterity, we have to make sure that we cover the accidental peacock because people are going to be like, how the heck does that even happen? So can you just give the quick like elevator pitch on how you ended up with a peacock on a horse farm?
Yes. So we're in a very rural area and animals get dropped off here all the time. So the people that own the property before had animals dropped off. Our neighbors have them dropped off. So yeah, about 2 years ago, Prescott, we think was dropped out on the road here because one of our neighbors saw him walking up the driveway one day.
Casual.
Right? It happens all the time. And I actually took a nap and then woke up and went to go feed the horses. It was like a quick afternoon nap, woke up, went out to feed dinner, and there was a peacock in my barn.
So, and there we go.
There you have it.
And now he just hasn't left.
He just hasn't left. So he actually has the last stall in the barn. That's all his. He's got a custom perch. He's got, yeah, food and water and everything he could possibly need. So of course he's still here.
I mean, if you're going to wander onto a property, there's definitely a worse one to find than a veterinarian's. Like, he knew. There was something where he was like, this is the right space to give me the stall and accommodations that I so require.
Yeah, I think he knew what he was doing.
And did the horses have any reaction to this? I feel like a lot of thoroughbreds have seen so much when they come off the track. Did they even bat an eye?
They did originally. So they actually chased him around our round pen.
No.
For like a whole day almost. They didn't do anything to him. I think they just didn't know what he was.
I'm trying to figure out what the heck this squawking colorful thing is.
Yeah. But now they don't even bat an eye. Henry, since he's new, when Prescott jumps up and down like off on and off doors or his perch, he still gets a little bit like, ooh, what's that? But
I think a giant bird making sudden movements would also get me. So I don't blame Henry for that one.
I mean, it gets me occasionally when I'm in the barn by myself. I'm like, what was that? What was that loud noise? Yeah. And the barn cat actually interacts with Prescott occasionally too. They are a little leery of each other. So that's an interesting relationship. They've been fine, but
I feel like as a cat though, like you are predisposed to be like, that's a bird and I hunt that. But then when it's gigantic and it makes very haunting sounds, like you got to kind of question your whole life choices here.
Yeah. 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 GP, Gifon GP, or we call him GP. He's definitely a little, yeah, he stays away from Prescott. Let's just say that.
That's self-preservation and I respect it.
Yeah, he's more interested in our hen, but the hen has an enclosed run because she's elderly. So,
oh, of course. Because of course. Again, as a veterinarian, why wouldn't you create every accommodation for all the animals that show up? I hope there are, I mean, selfishly, I hope there's more and more interesting things that keep showing up. But also for your sake, I hope that 2026 is the year that you get to maintain the current level of creatures you have.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I kind of love it.
Of course you do.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously I love animals, so I don't love that animals get dumped by people. That bothers me. But if they're going to drop them off somewhere, they can drop them off here.
That's I love fine. That. And like you just said, you know, you're a veterinarian. You love animals. When you were a little tiny Liz, did you always want to be a veterinarian? Like, did you look at peacocks at the zoo and go, I want to have that one day? Or like, where did the interest in that get started?
So I wasn't the kid that always knew that they wanted to be a veterinarian. I was a kid that always had a connection with animals. So I always loved animals, wanted to do something with animals since I was a little kid. We had a horse farm in Florida. My mom had a boarding barn for several years. And so I think it probably started there. We had cats, feral cats that were dropped off out there. So we had a ton of cats and obviously a bunch of horses. And I really think it started there. My mom bought me a couple of ponies. One, I didn't have like more than one at once. And I wanted to ride, but I was too stubborn to let anybody teach me lessons. I thought I could just do it.
You just self-teach how to ride a pony.
So I would watch lessons and think that I could teach myself, which obviously is not a thing.
Hilarious, though, that you would have even had that, like, just the level of self-confidence as a child. I really respect that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was not warranted in any way. I did not know what I was doing, but that's okay. My sister was a really talented hunter and equitation rider on the Florida circuit. So I had really good people around me. She had an awesome trainer, but yeah, I thought that I could just do it. I had no idea that it
how
was
hard could
like
it be?
Art form. Yeah. Yeah. So I had little ponies and I had a Western saddle and I was allowed to just sort of, you know, do my thing. But I didn't take lessons until much later. When I was in middle school, I had to beg my mom because, you know, we had a boarding barn and that's never like a super fun experience for anybody. Yeah. Like, so yeah, I had to beg my mom again to take lessons. And she finally let me after, you know, harassing her about it for several years.
She's probably looking at you as a middle schooler and being like, I remember at 4 years old, you thought you could teach yourself. So let's see how serious this is this time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was part of it, that she was like, if we're going to get back into this, you need to actually mean it.
You got
to
be serious.
So that's fair. You know, yeah, I needed to actually prove that I wanted to do it. So she let me.
I feel like now at this point, you can look back and be like, hey, like I became a veterinarian. I was pretty serious about horses.
Yeah. Like it wasn't a phase. Here we are, however many years later.
So then you started out, you know, having horses, you know, being around all the feral barn cats, as many of us were. You took lessons in middle school, but then like, when did the idea of like, hey, I could do this at like the highest level of healthcare kick in?
Yeah. So again, like I wasn't on that path. I thought about it, but I didn't know if I could do it. I didn't know if I could handle the blood and guts and all of that.
Sure, that's fair.
Human blood and guts are not my thing. So
also fair.
Yeah. So I was like, I don't know if I can do it with animals. But there were a couple moments like in high school that I look back on and I'm like, oh, I was totally like preparing myself for practice because a friend's horse got injured and she couldn't look at it. She couldn't like deal with the blood. And I was like, all right, just settle. You know, it's going to be okay. We're going to put her in the wash rack. We're going to get it all cleaned up. We'll see if we need to call the vet, you know, all of that stuff. So there were moments that that told me that I could do it, but I think I had to convince myself. So I went to college and I got a biology degree, just a general biology degree. I hadn't done the prereqs for vet school because they're hard and I wasn't on that path.
Sure.
Right. So, but after undergrad, I got a really good job. Actually, I worked at a pharmaceutical company. It was a great company, a really good job, but it didn't challenge me.
It didn't fill the cup.
Right. And I guess I'm the kind of person that needs that challenge. So I got restless at that job and I just kind of decided that I was going to go back to school and do my prereqs. I went to the University of Colorado Boulder and I was still living in the Boulder area. So I just went back to school to fulfill the prerequisites. And I also started working as a small animal veterinary assistant at that time.
Okay.
So that helped me sort of understand the career that was
You got to see kind of up close, like what are veterinarians dealing with outside of just the walking into the practice room, greeting a cat, and then, you know, saying feed it less and leave. Like you're seeing a lot more of the ins and outs. You're seeing as a crazy animal, pet, horse owner myself, you're seeing the crazy that you have to deal with on the ins and outs, which is its own, you know, challenge. So I'm sure that was pretty eye-opening in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And just like, what do procedures look like? What do, you know, how does everything work behind the scenes? You know, what do surgeries look like?
Yeah.
I will say that the first surgery I watched, I thought I was going to pass out.
But did you, or did you just feel like you would?
I mean,
I think that right there is like worthy of a little star in your book. You didn't actually pass out.
I did not. It was really hot in the surgery suite and I had to actually step out and just like get a breath and go back. I was fine after that. Like that was the only time that I've ever felt like maybe I can't do this, but I powered through. And
I mean, there's something to be said for the fact that you stepped out, took that breath, came back in and were like, nope, let's do it. Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, we are not passing out right now.
We didn't come this far to get this far.
This is not how this is going. So yeah, ever since then I've been just fine. No, almost fainting episodes.
And I think there's something kind of cool about your path too, because I think a lot of kids, or at least a lot of the kids that I grew up with who like wanted to be vets and those who went on to become veterinarians, they were the ones who like came out the womb with like a stethoscope and a stuffed animal. And they were like, this is what I'm going to do. And I respect the heck out of that. I certainly did not come out the womb being like, I'm going to be a podcaster, but here we are. But for people like you who came to it differently and took kind of more of a winding path on figuring that out. Like, I don't know. I just think there's something to be said for the fact that you can do that too. And I think there's something kind of intimidating in medical fields where if you didn't, you know, hit the ground knowing you wanted it, like, do you get to count yourself? And like, yeah, you do. So if there's anybody out there who's like, I don't know, like I'm in school, I'm not sure, maybe I do, like, don't count yourself out yet. I think Dr. Liz is a great example of like, when you want to do it, go do it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I definitely was not a traditional vet student. I mean, I wasn't old by any means, but a lot of my classmates had come right from undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't my path. It wasn't what happened in my life. And that's okay. I feel like it's becoming more accepted now that a lot of people that enter the career are just not the traditional student, and that's okay. You know, there's a lot to be said for having life experience too. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think knowing what you want, I think sometimes knowing what you don't want to do really makes a big difference. Like for you, you went into a job that you thought it was a good job, but it wasn't what was going to work for you. And I think there's something really important to knowing that sometimes, even more than doing what you think is going to work. Like try stuff. Try stuff, figure it out. If you don't want to do it, go back and go to vet school.
Yeah. Yeah. And I talk to a lot of people that are in their 20s and 30s and they're thinking about going to vet school. And I think as long as you educate yourself on, you know, what that entails and how much it costs, because it is very expensive.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, why not go for it? If, you know, if you are aware of what it takes to get through vet school financially and otherwise, educationally, you know, go for it. Why not? You know?
Yeah. And then I think too, there's something really cool about the fact that like you, and we haven't really touched on this, but we should, like you worked in a practice, you did the checkups, the dealing with clients, the surgeries and things like that with horses. But then now you're in kind of what at least I would consider like a less traditional veterinary role, but you're still Dr. Liz. So I think there's something really cool about that. And maybe we should take a second and kind of give you the floor to talk about how you went from, you know, the day-to-day routine care for horses to moving into this kind of role and what that felt like.
Yeah. Again, not a traditional path in any way. So I went through vet school thinking that I wanted to do equine surgery. I just thought it was super cool. And I had the most fun doing it when I was in vet school. My rotations were really fun on equine surgery and large animal surgery. So I was like, yeah, let's go down this path. So my first internship was at New Jersey Equine Clinic. They do all surgeries, basically, all elective surgeries. So they don't have emergency surgeries there. They just do elective surgeries. So it's a lot of orthopedic surgeries and airway surgeries for racehorses. So we had a lot of thoroughbreds and standardbreds there. But we also had sport horses that, you know, needed whatever elective surgery. So got through that internship, did not get a surgery residency after that internship, which is super common.
Okay.
I did get an awesome second internship at New Bolton Center. So they do a rotating large animal internship where you rotate through basically all the services, the large animal services at New Bolton Center. So it was really crazy, amazing experience. I got to see all kinds of really cool stuff there. Again, didn't get a surgery residency after that internship. I was still gunning for it though. I was still like, we're going to do this. We're going to do equine surgery. I ended up taking a research fellowship at New Bolton Center after that. So it was like a large animal model type research fellowship. So using large animal models for human orthopedic implants and things like that.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, that was really neat. And I also did equine emergency work during that time through the New Bolton Center Field Service. So
does that mean going out to emergent cases and caring for them on the spot?
Yeah.
Ooh, yep. That's intense.
Yeah. So it was very part-time doing the equine emergency work. I think it was like one shift a week or something like that.
Okay.
But, you know, did the whole thing, took the truck, all of that, went out and saw emergencies. Sometimes it was
did the comfort, did the care.
Yeah. Sometimes it was really late and sometimes it was crazy. But I got to take students with me, which was really cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Give them the
opportunity to experience it out in the wild.
Yeah. It was really good for them to see the emergencies, but it was fun for me too when it was really busy, you know, to teach them about all the things we were doing. I definitely had a few days where students sort of saved me because they were with me like for an entire busy emergency shift. And it was just nice to have another person with me to be.
Yeah, extra eyes, extra hands, somebody who's just thinking about things differently. Always good to have.
Yeah. So but by the end of that year, I had herniated two discs in my back. So I had a friend who had started his own mixed animal private practice, and I went and worked with him, which was crazy fun. It was any animal possible. So
even exotics?
Sheep, goats.
Oh, wow.
Alpacas, llamas, horses, donkeys.
That's so cool.
And small animals too, cats and dogs. So not we didn't really do exotics. I feel like if you're going to do exotics, you really have to do exotics. Like it's
really specialized.
Yeah.
But I mean, how often does a regular practice have a sheep walk in? So to me, that still feels on a level some kind of exotic.
They would come into the clinic too, which was really funny. We actually castrated a mini in the office.
What?
It was really cold, and so he came into the office.
That's so funny. I mean, yeah, that's a ton of experience right then and there.
Yeah. So it was so cool. I mean, we saw so many cool things. But I started to have health problems. So I have some chronic health issues, which that's sort of been the driver of a lot of decision making in my career path. So
sure.
Being on call a lot and being out on the road a lot really started to wear on me.
Yeah.
It was so much fun, but it just wasn't working for me physically. So I actually went and got a job at a shelter.
That's cool.
One of my students from New Bolton was working in shelter medicine. And I got a job doing shelter medicine. So it was scary because it was outside my comfort zone for sure.
Yeah.
You know, obviously we had a wellness clinic as well. So like the small animal wellness stuff, that was, you know, totally fine. But as far as doing the surgeries, so they do a high volume spay neuter.
Oh, okay.
That was a learning curve, but I really enjoyed it because I had enjoyed surgery so much before. So it took me a while to get fast. So it's high quality, high volume. So you're not doing a bad job. You're just doing it in such a way that you can do a lot in one day.
Really maximizing the efforts.
Yeah, which was a cool challenge. I really enjoyed learning about all of that. But again, I got to the point where I was doing a lot of surgeries in a day.
How was your back holding up to that?
Well, and my chronic illnesses, I was in the middle of a surgery one day and my body just decided that we needed to stop.
Oh, no. Oh, gosh, that's horrible.
Yeah. So I was able to finish the surgery. I wouldn't have put my patient at risk in any way.
But knowing that you had to power through that, that's pretty rough, like to say the least.
And that was the last day I ever practiced. Yeah, I had to stop practicing at that point. So yeah, it's been an interesting path so far. I haven't tried to go back and physically practice again, and I don't think that would be fair to do to my body.
No, it sounds like your body gave you a couple of warning signs and then a final notice on what it really wanted you to be able to do.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So here we are. And working at Smart Equine has been an incredible opportunity because I can physically do this. And it's been, again, it's been a challenge. It's been a little bit outside my comfort zone, but it's been such a cool opportunity for me as someone who's just physically not able to practice, you know, to stay in my career and stay in the industry and stay connected to all my colleagues and all that stuff. It's been super cool.
Yeah. And I'm not going to, you know, trivialize what you went through and say like, how cool that you ended up here. Cause like, that's a lot. Like it should be acknowledged. That's a lot to go through. And I think there's something really important to just note that for anybody who is looking at this career and wondering like, can I do it? Is this too hard? Like sometimes yes, sometimes no, but I think there's something really, really incredible that there's just a lot of opportunities out there. Like for you being here and being able to do this, like it's not all, if your back can't hold up to it, if your health can't hold up to it, like you're totally out. I think there's something really important to acknowledge there. There's a lot of ways that you can still be involved and a part of it. And as sorry as I am that you had to go through all that and how much I appreciate you sharing all of that, I selfishly am really glad that you ended up here and that we get to do this with you because it's been really fun having you.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I mean, it's just life, right? Everybody has challenges in life and this is part of my story and, you know, my health stuff is part of my journey and it's okay. You know, it's just stuff that I deal with on a daily basis, just like other people deal with other stuff. So,
yeah. And for anybody listening, we don't keep Liz like cooped up in a box, you know, padded with a suit or anything. Like, we still have her go and do things and be a veterinarian in places. And I did want to make sure that we talked about that, because I think a lot of what you do here is, it's really cool, because like head of veterinary affairs, it kind of makes it sound like you're like our personal vet for all of our horses, which is not the case. You're doing a
lot
of
that. Would be fun though.
It would be. I would actually love that. But it's a lot of like internal things that people might not get to see because they're not interacting with like the veterinary community on a day-to-day basis. But I would love for you to kind of talk about like what the day-to-day looks like a little bit for you, and then like some of the events and stuff that you get to do, because I always really like hearing those recaps.
Yeah. So one of my favorite things about this job is that every day is different. You know, we have recurring meetings every week and things like that, but every day I get to do different stuff, which I love. Again, you know, you remember I had the job after undergrad and it wasn't challenging me, and I got a little bored and a little restless. So this is a good fit for me because I get to do all kinds of different stuff. So I work primarily on a day-to-day basis with the research and development team. So that means that we're doing a lot of, you know, looking into trends and research and trying to sort of figure out, you know, if there are opportunities for new supplements out there. Mm-hmm. We also do some rehashing of our old supplements. So, you know, we don't just formulate a supplement and then just, you know, leave it alone. A lot of times we're looking at those older supplements and thinking, you know, can we improve on these? Is there anything in here that, you know, we could change or replace or what have you? So when we're not formulating new products, we are looking at old products and seeing if we can make improvements on them. So
yeah, and I don't think we're allowed to talk about it yet, but I think there is a reformulation coming down the pipeline for something that is like very near and dear to our hearts and we've had for a long time. So I'm sure we'll have you back to talk about that in the future, but there's something really cool that you bring that up, knowing that we're going to get to roll that out here hopefully in the next year or so.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, things change, regulations change, rules change. So we have to stay on top of that too.
Oh yeah.
You know, US Equestrian does a lot of updates to their regulations. So we have to stay on top of that stuff. So yeah. And then just sort of, I'm here for basically anything vet related. So anything that crops up, if there are, you know, issues with products or questions or anything like that that can't be answered by other people on staff, those get sort of funneled to me. So
I know you and I have worked together on wording and responses to things where I'm like, is this even a thing I can say? And you're very helpful with guiding in the right way and never making me feel like just because I didn't go to vet school that I'm not capable. So I always appreciate that.
Oh, well, I mean, you're so smart and we have so many brilliant people on staff. I mean, I really couldn't do this job without all of the super, super smart people that we have here. So
we are very lucky. And with the research and development team that you work with, like that's Ashley's team, right? Like that's her and a lot of the folks that you work with on that side of things as well, right?
Yep. Yep. So,
yeah, for anybody who's like, who's that other girl that usually hosts this? Ashley is a researcher. She's a developer. She's a scientist. So having a scientist and a veterinarian as a dynamic duo is pretty solid for us.
Yep. We're a small but mighty research and development team. There's a handful of us on the team, but we have so much fun. Our brainstorming meetings are some of my favorite things that we do, just coming up with new ideas or, like I said, ways to make any of our products better. That's some of my most cherished meetings.
Hey, if you just bottle the energy from those meetings and sell that.
Meetings can get dull, but those meetings are always really fun.
Yeah, I love that. And when you're not, you know, in the office doing the meetings, having those conversations, you're thrust out into the world and you get sent into a whole bunch of different places, right? There was at least a couple that you went to last year, I know.
Yeah. So they do let me out of my office every once in a while. So I get to travel. A lot of what we do is trade shows. So the ones we do every year are NAEP, which is the National Alliance of Equine Practitioners. So that's vets and farriers. So that's a really fun meeting. AAEP, which is just vets. It's the big vet meeting every year, which honestly is my favorite of the vet conferences. We'll say that.
What makes it the favorite?
What's that?
What makes it the favorite?
I just always feel really inspired, honestly.
That's when you cool.
Yeah. When you go and listen to the people that are sort of in the trenches doing the research and they have data that they can present that can potentially be helpful to horses, I just think that's so cool. And I also get to see, you know, all of my classmates and colleagues and do all the networking.
Yeah, there's a reunion aspect to it as well, which I'm sure that's got to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's just so much fun every year.
So NAEP, AEP, which are some really like vet focused ones, but then I know you've been to like Equine Affair, and I think, were you at Kentucky, the Land Rover event this year? You're just all over the place, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah. So we do Equisummit too, which is Kemen's virtual trade show.
Okay.
That's really fun. And then Equine Affair, Massachusetts, and Kentucky 3-Day. So those are the ones that we do annually. And then we've done some other things. We did something called Opto XP, which is continuing education for veterinarians. That was an ophthalmology conference. That was really, really cool. And then we've done some lunch and learns too, the biggest of which was at the University of Findlay. That was so, so fun. I got to talk to basically all the students, four groups of students, and, you know, talk to them about what I do, what we do, and then, you know, just some career stuff as well, just talking about career paths. And we got a cool tour of the facilities.
Oh, that's very cool.
It was really fun to get a tour and see everything that they do. Yeah, I was super impressed with both with the students and with the program.
It's always nice to walk away feeling like you got a little something out of that too.
And oh, then yeah.
At some of these events, you just kind of mentioned that like you've given talks and you've presented. Was there like one, or I'll even give you two if you want. Was there one presentation that you gave that you were like, this was cool to talk about? I'm so glad that I had like the ability to speak to a group of people on this specific subject.
I think both of my talks at Equine Affair have been really cool. Last year I did, I guess I should say 2024, I did just a general nutrition. It was like a nutrition 101.
Mm-hmm.
That was really cool. And then 2025, I did senior horse.
Oh, that's wellness, a really good one.
And nutrition, yeah. And, you know, both times I had really good engagement with people, really good questions. It's nice when people participate.
Yeah.
You know,
yapping at a crowd is something, but feeling like you get to actually talk to people about their horse and what's going on, that's got to feel a little bit more personal and fun.
Yeah, because you kind of feel you're talking to, you know, the horse owner. So mm-hmm. If I can take specific questions and, you know, give them some guidance on how best to care for their horses, I think that's really cool.
Let's talk to the horse owner that's listening to this episode for a quick second. We're right at the start of the new year. Yes, everybody, January 15th is still the start of the new year. Don't test me on this. We can't get too far into this year yet. But being close to the start of the year, like what is something that you would recommend horse owners kind of keep in mind or keep, you know, top of their care routine as we really just want to hit the ground, you know, galloping for, you know, lack of a better pun?
Yeah, I mean, I think being consistent year round is sort of key in all management decision making. There is a trend of discontinuing supplements and other products in the winter when horses aren't maybe working as hard. I think it's important to continue them through the winter. You know, I know that that costs a little bit more money, but, you know, things like joint support and GI support are really important to continue through the winter months. So I think that sort of powering through the winter with the same or at least something close to what you're doing during like competition months, if you're, you know, if you're riding and competing your horse, that's super important. Obviously, horses that are pasture pets or companions, you know, they should get the same stuff year round as well. But
I know, I kind of think of it like myself. Like I treat myself like a human, like a person with needs throughout so much of the year. And then when it comes, like especially the holidays, I really just treat myself as like a vessel for cheese. Yeah. And I don't feel better for having done that. Where if like maybe I had like a vegetable and made sure that I was also drinking water, I would come out of winter feeling a little bit less dairy laden. So I feel like calling that out for our horses is also fair. Like, yes, they can be feral for a few months if that's what you do, or they can have less work if that's how the routine goes. But making sure that you're keeping up with the care as much as possible definitely sets up for better success for the later months.
Yeah, I think of it like, so if you eat healthy all the time and then you eat something like a cheeseburger, which we all love cheeseburgers, right? But if you're eating salad all the time and then you eat a cheeseburger, your body definitely takes notice of that. So, and there's nothing wrong with indulging or, you know, again, you know, allowing your horse to take a break from, you know, don't pull their mane over the winter. Don't whatever, clip their whatever you're clipping.
If you don't have to clip them, don't. If you don't have to put them in the wash stall when it's cold, don't. Like, get away with what you can.
They can be a little feral, like you said, but I do think it's important to continue their nutrition as much as possible. The only thing that I discontinue in the winter is electrolytes. So if they're not sweating, they shouldn't really need electrolytes. If they're not working and sweating, they shouldn't really need them. But I do feed salt year-round to make sure that they are drinking.
Yeah, that makes sense. I know we had one at my barn. He was older, but we knew if his routine had been skipped and he hadn't gotten salt because he would stop drinking and we would have to make an emergent vet call. So like not every horse is that horse, but like that one always really sticks with me where I'm like, are they getting something to support their hydration year round? Cause if not, you can notice it really quick and it can be really scary. So yeah. I like that you called out the salt. And there's, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think you can feed, you know, an appropriate amount of just regular table salt. But then for horses who don't want just salt, which is valid, we also do have smart salt pellets. So I always have to call that one out. I feel like people don't know about that one, but it's very palatable. And a lot of horses do really like it.
Yep. That's what I use.
Yeah, there we go. Easy.
My horses are picky and don't eat salt. So
I'm sorry. Are you saying that your thoroughbreds are picky? That is so out of character.
So crazy. Yes, the thoroughbreds are picky, so they get the smart salt pellets and they don't even notice that they're eating salt. They, especially Homer, will not eat loose salt. He's very offended by loose salt. So
he has a sweet tooth only. Thank you very much.
Yeah, he's a little bit spoiled, but the smart salt pellets have been really helpful for that.
Yeah, I love that. And you mentioned, you know, keeping up with joint support and I think, and again, you're the veterinarian here, but I know that we've talked to folks before who they'll kind of let down a little bit over the winter. So if they're not being ridden as much, instead of like for, you know, giving our supplements as an example, if you're giving SmartFlex Ultimate, maybe you drop down to the Ultra or the regular, but you don't take it away entirely. And then you beef it back up when they're actually back in work. And I've always found that seemed to be like a really nice middle ground for like saving some money over the holidays, but still making sure that your horse gets something that they're really utilizing.
Yeah, I think that's fine. If you're just sort of downshifting for the winter, but continuing with some sort of whatever it is, joint support, GI support, you know, GI should probably be consistent year round. But if you want to decrease their joint support a little bit, I think that's okay. You know, as long as you're monitoring them to make sure that they remain comfortable and happy, you know, as long as they're doing okay, I think that's fine.
I think what you said is something that Ashley and I definitely harp on a lot, which is just like monitoring, keeping an eye on your horse, knowing what they look like, knowing what they feel like. That in and of itself can do so much just in making sure that your horse is as comfortable as you want them to be all the time and not just, you know, once you've noticed that it's gotten uncomfortable or not as great as you want.
Yeah. And horse owners know their horses the best, right? So if they're paying close attention, monitoring them, you know, you can notice little things like they're not moving around as much. They're a little stiff. Maybe they're isolating a little bit from their buddies if they're in a herd situation. You know, all of those things can point to the fact that they might not be as comfortable as they could be. But I think that's a good, like you said, a good middle ground. If, you know, if you're looking to save a little bit of money over the winter, you know, downshift a little bit with the joint support, that's okay. As long as, you know, you're staying on top of how the horse is looking, and as long as they're getting some sort of support, I think that's totally fine.
Yeah. So we can slightly downshift on joint. We can maintain on digestion. We can change, but maintain how we're giving hydration support and just really staying, as most of us do, very alert and on top of it for how we're keeping an eye on our horses. I think all that makes pretty solid sense and isn't crazy overwhelming either. You didn't give like a laundry list by any means.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of the hesitancy in using supplements is that it feels overwhelming sometimes, right? So
yeah,
there's so many products out there. There's so, even, you know, within our products, there's a lot of options.
Yeah.
Which, shout out to our customer care team. They're fantastic. So if you need guidance.
If you're sitting here being like, yeah, I literally don't know where to start, somebody tell me. We Liz and I cannot do it right here through this podcast, but the customer care team we have, like, call them, text them, whatever, smoke signals probably even at this point. They're pretty great at everything, but they can guide you through a lot of different like questions and answers and guide you towards a lot of different really cool products that you might not have heard about before. But it is overwhelming. And I think that's a really fair call out for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So it doesn't have to be scary. It doesn't have to be overwhelming, but supplements can be a really useful tool in filling any dietary gaps that your horse might have. So, you know, don't count it out just because it feels like too much, or, you know, feels like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing, or, you know, there's too many options out there, or it's all too expensive, or what have you, you know?
Yeah.
Like I said, our customer care team is there to help if, you know, if you're feeling like you're overwhelmed.
Yeah. And I will say, I think most listeners probably know this at this point, but like I started on customer care before I clawed my way up to marketing through sheer force of will, but that's a different story. But one of my favorite conversations was honestly when somebody would call in and say like, hey, I want to support these two things or these three things for my horse, and this is my budget. Like I loved an honest conversation like that because it was a really fun puzzle figuring out how close we could get, what we could fit in, what felt good, and leaving that conversation knowing that that owner, that rider gets to support their horse while also eating hopefully more than ramen every month. So like if you're ever nervous or embarrassed, you're like, that's not a fun conversation. It's honestly really fun. And I can guarantee that every single person that you would talk to on the phones has already done that for themselves. So this is not a new conversation in any way, shape or form. We're all, you know, balancing our budget as best we can and supporting our horses as best we can in between all of it.
Yeah. And that's why we have so many options, right? That's why we have Smart and Simple and, you know, Leg Up and all of those options, is because different people have different budgets, different horses have different needs. So
yeah, there's no one size fits all for people or for horses.
Yeah. I mean, you can have a horse that's a companion, like two of mine, or you can have a horse that goes to the Olympics. You know, there's there are elite athletes out there that also need dietary supplementation. So yeah, I mean, every horse is different. Like you said, just like people, you know, they all need a little bit different care routine, and that's okay. Like I said, that's why we have so many options. It does feel like it's a lot at times, but, you know, between the options for supplements and the options for, you know, packaging and delivery, things like that, we try to make things as easy as possible.
Yeah, definitely. And talking about, you know, like this can be stressful, it can be overwhelming. I want to be cognizant of your time because I know we need to let you get back to like all the important research and development work. But I do have like three final kind of like rapid fire questions for you, if that's all right.
Yeah.
All right. So we mentioned that supplements can feel stressful and overwhelming. Other than that, what is one thing that you think horse owners stress about that maybe they don't actually need to?
Well, I'm going to say, like, I stress about my horses all the time, constantly. So
oh, yeah,
I
mean, we're not changing it.
No shame. No shame in stressing about horses. They don't always make the best decisions for themselves. Oh, so I love to see my horses tearing around the pasture, but I also hold my breath every time it happens. So just know that I'm right there with you, stressing.
That might be the best answer you can give.
To that end, though, yeah. To that end, I feel like, you know, maybe it's a good idea to keep them in a stall to keep them from getting injured, but that can also lead to other issues. So GI issues, things like that. So actually keeping them moving and eating for the majority of the day is the best possible thing you can do for them if possible. So I think that's one thing is, you know, sometimes we want to be a little bit of a helicopter parent and protect them from themselves, but actually letting them be horses is the best thing we can do for them.
Yeah. And I'm sure that in and of itself creates a whole lot of stress for everybody, but sometimes letting them just like eat dirt and kick up a rock and throw around some feet as they play, like it's better in a lot of ways. So I think that's like a tough pill to swallow, but a really good one.
Yeah. It's hard to watch them tear around, but you know, they have to do it. And, you know, we can't change the way that they are built. We can't change their anatomy and physiology, but we can change the way we manage them to sort of help them. Yeah. To sort of help them, be their best selves.
All right. So the next is, what is something horse owners maybe don't stress about enough, if anything? Because I think we all stress about everything.
Yeah. But I'm going to say forage. So
good, solid. Yeah.
So forage, meaning grass and hay, we need to be always feeding horses a forage first diet. Everything else comes after grass and hay. The majority of their nutrition should come from their forage. So, you know, if you do have show horses and they are in stalls a lot, the best thing to do is to, you know, keep some sort of hay bag in front of them. A slow feeder hay bag is great. They can only pull out so much at a time and it sort of mimics grazing. So my horses actually have like I'm really fortunate. I have an in and out situation where my stalls open out into my pasture. So they're only closed in their stalls when they're being fed, basically. But I also have slow feeder hay bags in their stalls. So if they're not out grazing, if they want to take a little rest, they go in their stalls and they eat out of a slow feeder hay bag. So that mimics what they would be doing outside, except for they're not moving around, which is also very important. But, you know, if they're taking a little break from moving around and grazing, they can sort of eat the same way in their stall.
And making sure that, you know, the quality is as great as you can make it and that it's consistent as you can make it. I'm sure all of that also plays into it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. High quality forage. It's super important. Thank you for bringing that up. We want to feed them good hay, not just any hay.
I just keep thinking about how Ashley's able to cut her own hay and test it. And like, we're not all so lucky. So it's always worth calling out the doing what you can when you're not Ashley with her own hay fields.
Yes. And I have a farm, but I don't grow my own hay. My neighbor does.
That's cool.
Yeah, she feeds her cattle and her donkey with the hay that they grow, which is so cool. But it's just not, I don't have time for that.
Not everybody has that ability, and that's okay.
I don't have the hours in the day to be doing that. So, but I have a really good hay supplier. So there you go.
And that in and of itself is worth quite a bit. Okay, so we have things that you stress about that maybe you don't need to would be going outside, getting more movement. It's good for mental. It's good for physical. We have things that you maybe don't stress about enough, which is like really high quality forage, really consistent, making sure that they have a forage first diet. And then my last one is, what is a habit that you wish every horse owner either had or could have?
I'm a little biased, but I'm going to say, listen to your veterinarian. So find a good veterinarian that you like and trust. And then if you have questions about your horse's health, talk to your veterinarian about it. So, you know, the internet is fantastic. There's so much information right at our fingertips, but there's also some really bad information out there. So, you know, there are Facebook groups and all that stuff. And that's great. I love that people connect on Facebook groups. But sometimes, you know, health issues should maybe not be discussed.
A lot to be said for having the trained professional who knows your horse come and put their hands on your horse and have a conversation with you about that one-on-one. I think there's a lot of information that I've gathered and gained from the internet that I've been very fortunate in my time as a horse owner. I've been able to run through my veterinarian because both the ones that I've worked with have been so gracious about having conversations and answering questions and things like that. But I definitely learned, I think, through those conversations that, like you said, not everything I learned was presented in a way that made sense in my situation, where like the way I read it, it made sense to me. But then when talking through it with the vet, it was more eye-opening, and I had a better appreciation for like the nuance that went into certain things and other, you know, treatment options and things like that. So I think that's a really, from a veterinarian, that's a really fair call out to make sure that you're working with the people who are trained and schooled. And I mean, they do it because they love your horse at the end of the day. Like nobody goes into veterinary science being like, wow, I'm going to be famous from this. You know what I mean? Like they do it because they like horses.
Yeah, they're not going to be rich or famous. Yeah, that's for sure. But yeah, again, there's nothing wrong with Facebook groups or forums or whatever. You know, that's great. And
community is awesome.
It's fun to chat with like-minded people. That's all great. But ultimately, if you're making decisions about your horse, lean on your veterinarian. They know your horse best. They know you best. You know, there may be little things that they're seeing or noticing about your horse that maybe can't be conveyed, you know, to other people. And ultimately, they should be the ones that are helping you make those medical decisions for your horse.
Yeah, because it's big and you deserve to have somebody who really has all the training to help you make those decisions.
Yeah, I mean, horses are expensive and it's a lot. It's a lot to keep horses. And, you know, you want to make sure that you're just making the best possible decisions for them.
Totally agreed. Well, I think that's a really, really solid way to end a Meet the Veterinarian episode. So thank you, Liz. So as a reminder, everybody, from Dr. Liz herself, keep up your joint care, keep up your digestion care, keep up your hydration care, keep good quality forage in front of your horse, let them keep moving, and work with your veterinarian. That's a pretty manageable list, I think, to really kick off the start of the year. And then once February hits and we're in the year of the horse, that really will make everything hopefully come all together for everybody. And this will be everybody's year to have some really great rides and some really great horse health ahead of them. But thank you, Liz. This was really, really awesome to have you on. I'm sure I will be bringing you back in to chat with Ashley and I again in the future, but just really appreciate your time. And it was great to have you.
Yeah, this was so much fun. Thank you so much, Jenna. I had a great time.
As a reminder, you can find links to today's products in the show notes on your podcast player or on the website at www.smartpackequine.com/blog. And we are here twice a month on the 15th and the 30th, but in between, find us on Instagram and Facebook as Smart Equine or shop online at smartequine.com.
Until next time, stay smart, keep learning,
and give your horse a cookie from us.